This is the 14th of November, 2020. I am Charles Stewart, and this is another conference for the pro-tem temporary effort at establishing a Supreme Court of Law for the people of the United States of America. There is no Supreme Court of Law presently in place, and humble our beginnings may be here with just a few attendees. We are the only game in town, I do believe. If you want process by law, that has, as a matter of law, it has supreme authority, then we're the only game in town. Anyway, humble though we may be, we're starting out here. And I'd like to briefly mention to Lewis that I've got all of the older files backed up, Lewis, and downloaded. So if you want to make some more space on in the background there, that would be a good thing.
Okay, will do.
All right, thank you. In pursuit thereof, I'd like to go ahead and focus on our agenda item one. Here is an opening prayer, and I'd like to, and it's been expanded with a web link citation there from William Blackstone, and I'd like to open with prayer first. True God, Yahweh, Jehovah, champion of truth and justice in the universe, in a non-sectarian manner, you're still the same, no matter which denomination we look at you from. Please send your angels with your Holy Spirit to guide and direct our discussion. Help us all to be humble before the ultimate cause of truth and justice, to which you yourself conform. And hereunder, please aid us in moving forward and bringing law and order and justice and peace to our American people and to the people of this world, as seems to have been the effect of the legend of your precious Son of Jesus Christ back 2,000 years ago. And based upon that legend, we pray in his name. Please bless us. Amen. And I'd like to read a little bit as a more smooth transition between our normal discussion, the web link that we've brought up on the citation from Mr. Blackstone. I'd like to spend a few moments. I'd like to read this whole one-page section that really transcends the segue between Bible-thumping, religious Christianity, and the laws of nature. The laws of nature. Back when Blackstone wrote, around 1750 or so, part of his mission statement was to try to convince the American people to be good slaves under the Roman Empire model of government that they were perpetrating, they had been infected with. But over and above the Roman Empire model of government, England had the heritage of the common law. And so they had a closer bond with the laws of nature. And Mr. Blackstone actually gave some real interesting lip service to both the common law of England and these laws of nature. And this particular one-page document summarizes it quite nicely. If I might go ahead and do a quick read here, which proceeds as follows. As therefore, the Creator is a being not only of infinite power and wisdom, but also of infinite goodness, he has been pleased to contrive the constitution and frame of humanity that we should want no other prompter to inquire after and pursue the rule of right, but only our self-love, that universal principle of action. And when he's talking about self-love there, that's not just greed individual. That's in a larger context, I believe, of all of society and for what's best for society. His wording is kind of poor there, but I don't think it detracts from his main point. Continuing on, for he, God, has so intimately connected and so inseparably interwoven the laws of eternal justice with the happiness of each individual that the latter, the laws of eternal justice, no, the happiness of each individual, the latter, cannot be attained but by observing the former, the eternal laws of justice. And if the former be punctually obeyed, the eternal laws of justice, it cannot but induce the latter, which is the happiness of the individuals. Continuing on, in consequence of which mutual connection of justice and human facility, happiness is the definition of that facility word, in consequences of which mutual connection of justice and human facility, he has not perplexed the laws of nature with a multitude of abstract rules and precepts, referring merely to the fitness or unfitness of things, as some have vainly surmised, but he has graciously reduced the rule of obedience to this one paternal precept, that man should pursue his own true and substantial happiness in larger context. This is the foundation of what we call ethics or natural law. Continuing on. Four, the several articles into which it has been branched in our system, that's the common law of England, the several articles into which it is branched in our systems amount to no more than demonstrating that this action, that this or that action, tends to man's real happiness, and therefore very justly concluding that the performance of it is part of the laws of nature, or, on the other hand, that this or that action is destructive of man's real happiness, and therefore the laws of nature forbid it. Okay, continuing on. This law of nature being coeval with mankind and dictated by God himself is, of course, superior in obligation to any other. It is binding over all the globe, in all countries, at all times. No human laws are of any validity if contrary to this, and such of them as are valid derive all of their force and all of their authority, mediately and immediately, from this original, which is the eternal laws of justice and laws of nature. Yes. Moving on from there, these laws of nature override. Mr. Blackstone admitted that they override statutory codes and municipal judicial precedents. That they all must be held against a backdrop of natural laws of truth and justice. And so this is the basis, this is the very simplified basis for why we have the right to confront the de facto municipal government that is pursuing an agenda of evil. Whether or not the individual office holders know that they're involved in an evil conspiracy or not is irrelevant. Once we point out to them that they are in violation of the supreme laws of nature, the supreme laws of justice, they need to back off and abort whatever misguided agenda they're involved in, and they need to adjust their behavior accordingly. Otherwise, the people have the right to resist, the right and duty to resist with whatever force is necessary their evil agenda. So so I hope that lays a foundation. And I'd like to take a moment to point out that these laws of nature, laws of truth and justice, secular humanists and atheists can identify with this. We don't have to drag in all the Bible thumping to tap into the laws of nature. We can just leave off that part in the Declaration of Independence, where it sets the tone for the entire nation by referring to the laws of nature and of nature's God. People that are atheists or agnostics, they can just draw a line through that and nature's God part. We can rock and roll with them on just the laws of nature. We can deal with secular humanists with just referring to the laws of nature. Some of us prefer to go the more biblical route, but that's okay. We've got a bedrock, a foundation of principles that are firmly rooted in concepts of justice and natural law and keeping the peace. And that is why everything gets real simple here. And we're not going to take it anymore. These stupid-ass excuses that the corrupted public servants are using for pursuing an evil agenda and enslaving us all, sorry, that ain't going to fly anymore. We're organizing posse comitatus in our own counties, and we're taking back authority to responsibly self-govern, and we're not swallowing your crap anymore. So I wanted to get that off of my chest. It feels good to vent a little bit here. I hope you're all up to indulging me if I go into a few more rants like that before the end of the conference here. Let me see. Ah, we got David with us. Welcome, David.
Thank you.
All right. Agenda item two.
Nikki.
Go ahead.
I just want to say hi. I see Mike's on, Nikki's on, and probably Lewis is there too.
I am. Greetings, David. Okay, and Nikki, I saw that you put something in the chat, that link. You say this may go along with what Blackstone's penned. Did you want to say something regarding that? Or did you want the link up? Or was it just for reference, everyone, too?
It's just for reference. I have a mouthful of food here.
Okay.
What it is, experimental embryology, and if we're all in the body of Messiah, we all have a special function within it. And so it goes along with what Blackstone was saying, is that it's a superior form of government. And, of course, they thought about the bicameral system, of course, is the heart of the matter, and so on and so forth. So it kind of all goes together. I'm not going to, share it with everyone unless they want it. I'll let you guys decide whether to do that or not. But it can be influenced by, and I have that on the slide too, by experts trick cells into switching IDs, and that's where we're at now. Now, I posted this in 2010, so 10 years... years old, but we are at a course of human events that is unprecedented. So it's up to you guys whether you want it or not. Share it if you like.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki. Agenda item two is a call for new items to be placed on the agenda of this Supreme Court. Is there any new items that anyone would like to have listed in our agenda for future conferences here? Anybody? Hearing none, we'll revisit that before we close here. And progress in gathering signatures on jury verdict documents. Has anybody been able to beat the bushes and find anybody that might be willing to sign on to especially our coronavirus jury verdict? Anybody have any progress to report on that issue? Hearing none. Open discussion of affirmations or denials of qualified elector status. Is there anybody that would like to either affirm publicly that they recognize other people as qualified electors, or that would be the first issue. Is there anyone? I'd like to start by affirming that everybody in the conference here, in my book, is a qualified elector. Would anybody else care to make any similar affirmations or denials?
This is David. I believe that I've already included everybody on in this conference, but in case my memory escapes me, if for some reason I did not include Mike Zarzano in Florida, I would like to make sure that his name is on my list. I yield.
Thank you, David. I'm sure Michael appreciates that.
Yes, thank you, David. Appreciate it.
Okay, and continuing on, agenda item 3 is throwing down the gauntlet, more or less. This is the public notice of treason document, and I should change it, constructive notice of treason. If we might take a look at that, my computer is being really slow today. Thank you for pulling that up, Lewis. Yes. I'd like to, because, you know, even myself, the Declaration of Independence talks about how people are usually inclined to suffer evils while evils are sufferable, and I'm in the same bag. I could suffer a few evils if as long as evils are sufferable, but they're coming to a point where they are no longer sufferable, and what's bigger is that there's an agenda from dark forces behind the scenes that are very ancient. This isn't a new battle between good and evil, between the cause of liberty and the cause of tyranny. This is a very ancient battle. It is necessary. There comes a point, like I believe the time has come in the United States of America here, where we need to throw down the gauntlet, similarly as with the Declaration of Independence, only there were high-level Masons involved in the composition of the Declaration of Independence, and probably also Roman Catholics, which are inherently problematic. So we need to more clearly build upon the good propositions set forth in the Declaration of Independence, and to more specifically delineate the items of the nature of the problem, and also segue over to another document that talks about the solution, but clearly at least referencing in our main document here that solution, but in more important detail explaining the nature of the problem. Because almost everybody is inclined to believe that our government, our founding fathers, had infinite wisdom, and they were divinely inspired when they engineered the Constitution document that was composed in 1787 and formally adopted in 1789. And unfortunately, those people are being naive. What came out of those discussions was a compromise between good people. There were a lot of good people, no doubt, but there was also evil people in that document, involved in composition of that document. In fact, if we might jump over, I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants here, in the citations in support of the treason document, I'd like to segue to citations group two, from U.S. Supreme Court Judge Thurgood Marshall. I believe he was a black man. And he said something very, very, very good, cutting edge here. And I'd like to quote from it. If, Lewis, you might be able to jump around there a little bit and bring that citation group 2 up. My computer's real slow here. Yeah, you got it, Lewis. Mr. Thurgood Marshall said, "Nor do I find the wisdom, foresight, or sense of justice exhibited by the framers particularly profound. To the contrary, the government they devised was defective from the start. Moral principles against slavery, for those who had them, were compromised, with no explanation of the conflicting principles for which the American Revolutionary War had ostensibly been fought. The self-evident truths that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it was not the first such compromise." Even these ringing phrases from the Declaration of Independence are filled with irony. For an early draft of what became the Declaration assailed the King of England for suppressing legislative attempts to end the slave trade and for encouraging slave rebellions. The final draft adopted in 1776 did not contain this criticism. And so, again, at the Constitutional Convention, eloquent objections to the institution of slavery went unheeded. Okay? Okay? All of the people that like to put the Constitution document up as divinely inspired and blessed by God, they're behind the curve in understanding and comprehending what God's really all about. God don't like slavery. And the very nature of Roman Empire civil municipal government is a slave trading government. Empires, by their very nature, have emperors. Emperor is a god king who everybody has to do what they say as a slave or else they get murdered. That's what it's like under an empire model of government. And America, by all of its profound words, was dedicated to throwing off those institutions of slavery. But precisely as Mr. Marshall says here, it's hollow, it's empty. They're talking a good talk, but they're not walking the walk. And it's left to us in these modern ages when there's no more wiggle room on the chessboard. It's time to throw down the gauntlet and entrench, because we're in a final battle here against slavery. And on this the issue of slavery that Mr. Marshall so well points out, what do you think municipal bonds are? Every city and most counties are floating, I believe, municipal bonds. Bondage is slavery. If you don't pay your taxes to service those municipal bonds, you get kicked off of your house, your home. Municipal jurisdiction is a slave trading jurisdiction. Civil jurisdiction is municipal jurisdiction. Civilization is a bad thing. It's Roman Empire conquest. But I'm ranting a little bit. Let me get back to context here. Our treason document. I'd like to read it. Constructive and public notice to all government office holders at all levels of government within the geographical boundaries of our people's constitutionally lawful and de jure United States of America. And all cities, counties, and states, and all agents and franchisees thereof. That's gotten a real broad swath here, everybody. That's every public servant in the USA, basically. This document is designed to be presented to. Continue on. Take constructive notice of this complaint. Continuing on. That a singular and powerfully organized criminal racketeering syndicate is routinely terrorizing and coercing many good executive, legislative, and judicial officers of our nation, all in manners which empowers them to pillage and plunder our common American people, and that those evils more specifically result not only in routine obstruction of justice, but also in literal, aggressive, violent, and socially parasitical class warfare, and that these evils inherently result in what effectively amounts to treason. Okay? Devil worshippers are committing treason, and we're not going to take it anymore. So, note please also that this document is herein being presented to each and all of you by an organized American National Assembly of constituent electors, each of whom are hereby partaking in the collective sovereignty of our traditional American national organic body politic as electors and constituents, because all power is inherent in the people. We intend to organize and deputize multitudes of patriotic American qualified electors to conduct constitutionally legitimate judicial investigations as to whether or not you are personally responding as a responsible public servant to the accusations contained herein about the massive criminal conspiracy which is destroying our American nation. When you are so confronted, do not pretend to be ignorant of the accusations contained herein. If you might find any accusations or assertions contained herein to be in error, then, in a timely manner, notify us of your objection. Contact information for our leaders is contained at the end of this and related documents. Notice to the agent is notice to the principal. Notice to the principal is notice to the agent. Web link to where all of our files here are located. And the second to the last paragraph there, I'll reread. If you might find any accusations or assertions contained herein to be in error, then, in a timely manner, notify us of your objection. Yeah, period. And thereunder, that is similar to a document that related document about self-governing communities, which we looked at last week, where we also notified them of to let us know if they see any errors in what we're saying here. I need to switch phones here real quick. Should be seamless. Hold on. Can you all hear me okay? Anybody?
Sure.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. So we've got a notice to them that if they have objections to what we're saying, they need to notify us. And this, to take this whole document to the higher level, we need activists in the local jurisdictions calling up their local representative after their local representative has been emailed or faxed or postal mailed a copy of this document, state representatives, city council members, county commissioners, national representatives, national senators, state senators, people like that. A good follow-up conversation there would be like talking to a secretary for a state representative or something. Did Representative so-and-so get our email that we sent yesterday about the constructive notice of treason document? Yeah, okay, you got our email. Very good. Did you see the line there about please let us know in a timely manner if you've got any objections to where anything here might be in error? Did you see that we're going to presume that you recognize that there's no errors in this document if you don't object in a timely manner? Okay, yeah, you see that part? Okay. Okay, thank you. I'm glad that you recognize that and you're aware of that. This call's being recorded, and I'm glad to be working with the representative and his staff there in trying to promote honorable government in whatever state we're in. So, and this is where it's got to go. It's way more than Charles Stewart can handle by himself. Okay, I can just kind of provide the templates for what to use here. But see, when you throw down the gauntlet in front of them and notify them clearly about these things, and then, later on, you go into battle with them, then you can say, wait a second, I gave you the constructive notice of treason document, and I gave you the document of citations in support of the constructive notice of treason, which includes the U.S. Senate report talking about emergency powers and how all of these fraudulent declarations of emergency are taking away our constitutionally guaranteed rights. That's item one in the citations document. You've had notification of all of this, and now you're telling me that we need more tyranny and despotism, and you haven't responded to the merits of the accusations contained herein? No, we think we've got the right to organize our peace officers as posse comitatus and alter, reform, or abolish the present government under which you are finding color of legitimacy to oppress us, because we're tired of taking this. With a little bit of that tone set, my computer is multitasking here. Yeah. Okay, we're good. Yeah. Yeah, you got it highlighted there. Nice, Lewis. I'm switching back and forth windows, and my computer's doggedly slow here. But on the second page there of the constructive notice of treason document, we emphasize that even though we're being boldly confrontational on our first page, we open up talking about we are seeking peace. We are seeking peace with them, okay? And that's important. That's the base level in common law. That's why common law jurisdiction officers are called peace officers, opposed to police officers. They're peace officers. Continuing on. We reference the other documents, including the alternative economics document, that are all part of this five-document package. And as we proceed down, at the bottom of page two is specific examples of complaints and grievances related to treason. Okay, and at the top of the list, and we could go back further in history, it's certainly started way back, but for modern history, I think a good place to start is the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. And I linked some videos under it that are clearly explaining the whole evil agenda there. And then issue number two is another thing that is frequently overlooked as a minor issue, but a lot of people aren't aware of this. The 1941 Pearl Harbor attack was engineered by Roosevelt. He knew that the Japanese were coming in to bomb Pearl Harbor, but he had put an embargo on Japan, and they were struggling for their life. And he was scheming purposefully to prompt the Japanese to counterattack our people in Pearl Harbor by putting an embargo on Japan and cutting off their supply for economic goods. And thereunder, there were warnings about the incoming planes from Japan, aircraft, their aircraft carriers and things were bringing in planes to do their attacks on Pearl Harbor. And he knew it was coming. and he had warnings, and he stifled those warnings because he wanted that attack. He wanted those Americans to die so that he could then act, posture, pretend like he was all hysterical and he was outraged about the nasty, evil Japanese. He was a pretender. He was a liar. He was a forked tongue and murderous deceiver. Okay? That's the kind of history we're dealing with, and it continues to this day. And for further evidence, the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy and the cover-up by the Warren Commission, so-called chief judge of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren. That Supreme Court is so dysfunctional that they couldn't even hear it and address it judicially. They had to appoint a special commission with some color of legitimacy granted by the chief judge thereunder to do something entirely non-judicial to cover up the malicious assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who was actually trying to do some honorable things. And then continuing on, the 1995 bombing of the Federal Murdoch Building in Oklahoma and the brutal murder of many good federal employees therein and the cover-up thereafter, mostly at the hands of rogue and criminally lawless federal officials and agents, including the fact that it was a physical impossibility for the truck bomb that was involved therein to have actually caused that much destruction. Okay? They're murdering their own people. The September 11th, 2001 demolition of the World Trade Towers, that was purposefully engineered, and they did a mass murder of over 3,000 Americans therein. And in 2011, Federal District Judge John Roll was murdered by what looks like an MKUltra mind control slave. The guy that got nailed for that was all kinds of wacko. And Attorney General Eric Holder under the Obama administration was shuffling money around, and Federal District Court Judge John Roll had issued a proclamation that they weren't going to get to commandeer the money for their gun running programs the way Attorney General Eric Holder wanted to do in his Fast and Furious gun running program. And guess what? Within a couple weeks after Federal District Court Judge John Roll's decision on that matter, obstructing the agenda of de facto Attorney General Eric Holder to abscond funds, guess what happened to John Roll within 2 weeks of his decision? He got murdered by what looks like an MKUltra mind control slave, Jared Lee Lawner. Yeah. Exhibits all the characteristics of an MKUltra mind control slave. This is inside classic CIA high intelligence level operations. And see, they murder their own. They murder their own. Continuing on, the 2013 cold-blooded murder of Los Angeles police officer Christopher Donner, and he was a black man, I believe. The evidence in this case indicates Donner was merely attempting to expose epidemic corruption within the L.A. Police Department, but who was criminally obstructed therefrom, and he was hunted down and murdered like he was a rabid dog by corrupted and subversive conspirators within and surrounding the same L.A. Police Department by the same evil forces generally complained of herein. Okay? They murder their own. As soon as some public servant, a judicial officer or an executive officer, might start standing up and actually trying to make progress towards bringing forth harmony with the supreme laws of truth and justice and peace, the natural laws, they get murdered. They get whacked. They get... Because... We've got an evil, subversive conspiracy here. And that catapults us back into the spirit realm as we open talking about in prayer and the Blackstone citation about the laws of nature and nature's God and that there is a supreme creator, some of us believe anyway, because the Pizzagate thing with the child pedophilia and murder and stuff that's going on, you can contemplate that in secular terms. You don't have to be a Bible thumper to comprehend that there are perverted sex fiends out here that actually murder children. They get off sexually on doing murder at the same time. And they're connected to organizations that clearly purport to be satanic. Okay? This brings us back into the biblical realm. There are Satan worshipers that brutally rape and murder children, and it's well documented. They drink the blood of the adrenaline-laced blood of children. When they sacrifice those children, they terrorize them, and the children, their adrenal glands pump because they're in fight or flight mode, and that produces adrenaline in the blood. And then they slit the throat of the little boy or girl. And they drink the blood, and it gets them high. It gets them high. They're addicted to it. Ex-FBI agent, District Supervisor Ted Gunderson, and Georgia State Senator Nancy Schaefer, both of these people were murdered by these devil worshippers, okay? And I'm not proposing that it's not necessary that you become a Bible thumper in order to comprehend these things. The evidence in the secular humanist realm is quite adequate just to realize that we got a problem here. Okay? Continuing on. That is a brief summary. And in amended versions of this constructive notice of treason, maybe we could go ahead and put in some other issues. I plan on eventually getting updates to a lot of these documents. But I should pause for comments or questions there on what we've covered so far, and especially if people comprehend how this document is drawing a line in the sand, that we're letting everybody know about the nature of the evil that we confront in this particular document, and I'd like to pause for comments or questions about the merits of my strategy for using documents like this to bring progress in these areas. I yield. Comments, questions, anybody? Okay.
Well, Charles, I was waiting for somebody else to say something. I know we've got people who are strongly in belief of things on this call, but you and I'm just going to say it so everybody else can hear it, because I know everybody else really well, and that is that, you know, you and I have talked before about your style of writing, and I've commented before, and I've even taken a healthy section of your writings and tried to put them together into my own style of writing, and you know, that does not include so many like and signs instead of the word and, and capitalized words in the middle of sentences, all these things which, if we want to appeal to a larger audience, in my view, only my view, because you have expressed this does not matter to you. belief, which counters my belief, and that is that people, generally speaking, the general public, who've been educated in public schools, has general principles of grammar and spelling and sentence writing and paragraph writing that are, I know a lot of our American public has been dumbed down to such extent that they couldn't tell you a noun from a verb, much less an adjective or adverb or anything else, or where it's supposed to go and what it's supposed to do in a sentence. But a healthy number of power people in the United States have those standards well understood, and if we are going to appeal to a lot of those people who are in the urban environments, mostly in controlling positions, that and have this a lot of the same beliefs that we do, I think they just need the leadership to go with it, that we need to appeal to them with a structure of writing that is comprehensible to them. Because I've read your stuff, and I have to slow way down in order to see that the beginning letter of a capitalized word is in the middle of a sentence and not the beginning of a sentence. Things like that. I yield.
Thank you, David. I'm sure that there are many others besides yourself that have that complaint about my style of writing. And I do not take delight in causing good people difficulties. But I would like to point out there's, if you read the older English case law, stuff especially before the American Revolution, there was capitalization of what were termed as power words to emphasize by capitalizing the first letter an important word that needs to be emphasized. And I've to explain a little bit what's going on in my brain there, speed reading. I've studied books on speed reading. And since early on, I've been influenced by trying to make my documents easy for speed readers to quickly and efficiently come to scan my work and comprehend the essence of what I'm talking about. And then if they want to go back and get into the details, they can do that. But the power words, I think it's useful to capitalize words like treason, capital T. That's an important word. The ampersand sign that I use a lot. I was early on also trying to become an efficient computer programmer. I could never get the hang of it. My passion is really about law, and you can't be a genius at law and computer programming both, so I chose law. But I learned enough from computer programming that each digit takes up extra space, and when in terms of making code, computer code, short and efficient, it's better to engineer one single digit, like an ampersand sign, as opposed to three digits, which is AND. I know by itself maybe that isn't enough to justify, but in the nature of the spiritual battle that we're in, this is really the bottom line where I'm at, and why I'm not inclined to change. And I welcome you or anybody else re-editing my stuff into formats that are more comfortable for you to use, but I'm not doing it. And that is because the nature of the spiritual battle that we're currently in, it's not going to matter whether or not I spell out and or use an amber sham sign. If you're using my material, whether or not it's got an amber sham sign or an and, three-letter word, there isn't going to make a difference. And it's not going to make a difference whether or not I've got some capitalizations in the middle. And the rich people, the powerful movers and shakers that might be inclined to support us, I'm sorry, the nature of, like the document we're looking at, thank you, Lewis, for keeping it up on, when we start talking about treason here and how they're conspiring to reduce everybody in America to slavery, okay, I'm sorry. Whether or not I capitalize a few extra words and whether or not I use a few more amber sam signs than is comfortable for aristocrats to read, that's going to be irrelevant. If you're an aristocrat and you're thinking about throwing in with us and you're deciding no because we got some amber sam signs in there or a few too many capitalizations, that's fine. I don't want you in here. Go away. This is a battle for people that are sincere and seeking godly righteous justice. To my mind, the details of my unique methodology for communicating my ideas, the American Constitution is a sack of garbage, like Thurgood Marshall explained there. They didn't fight slavery. They talked a real nice talk against it, but they didn't do it. And similar with the Bible. If you look at the Bible, Paul, I don't believe Paul was a real apostle. He was 13. The metaphysics is 12. Jesus set up 12. So there's lies in the Bible, there's lies in the Constitution, and there's lies about the Queen's English, about how we're supposed to write. And everything needs to be deciphered and contemplated, and we're living in precedent-setting times, game-changing times here, and I like to believe I've got some valuable answers to contribute, but I need to express them in my way. I need to emphasize the words that I need to emphasize, I'm hoping that people can comprehend my good intention and they'll just work with me on it. And people that can't, well, I guess I'm reduced to just a few people that can tolerate my eccentricity. I don't mind being referred to as eccentric. You can do that public if you want. But anyway, I'm glad you drew that out, David. I just wanted to give an explanation there. And I see we got somebody new, Alan, here. I yield.
Well, thank you. I just was saying that in response to your throwing out there that, you know, are you soliciting for questions or comments regarding using documents like this to push the agendas that we've got? I yield.
Thank you, David. I know your concern is righteous and you're only concerned about helping us advance the movement, and I guess if somebody felt like going through it and making all of my documents more palatable to normies, then I would welcome that. I would not feel offended by that. I see somebody named Alan joined us. Would you like to say hi, Alan?
Yeah, this is Alan, or Daryl.
Daryl. Good to hear you, Daryl. How's things going with the Beacon Group there?
Well, they're going. It's slow, not as well as like to be expected, but I was just listening to your little speech here a little bit ago, and I don't know how you were claiming you know, the Constitution and the Bible, all this has a bunch of lies and stuff like that in it. You know, a lot of times it's our understanding that, you know, seems to maybe have the confusion more than it is, or our lack of understanding, maybe.
I think you didn't hear probably the citations group two of in support of our constructive notice of treason document earlier on in the conference, where we quoted U.S. Supreme Court Judge Thurgood Marshall. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't. I just got on here just a few minutes ago, and I can only be on here for about another 20 minutes, and then I got to go. But,
okay, well, maybe it'd be worth it for me to reread that here, just because I think, I know it's not only yourself, but you represent a lot of good, honorable Americans that are quite supportive of the U.S. Constitution document. And I agree that the Bill of Rights was a good thing, but pardon me?
The problem is it only applies to their citizens, and it's really a private charter for the corporation, so, you know, all that, but it does place limitations upon what they do, and we can hold them to that point, I think.
How can we do that if we don't have our own common law-compliant national government? As long as they're posturing as the legitimate national government, they're not going to self-police, and we don't have a handle on policing them.
Well, that's a problem is the enforcement that, you know, we are needing, you know, to put on the common law. We need to establish our common law here within this country, and so we can, you know, so we can go ahead and enforce it and implement it against those who are trespassing upon rights.
Well, that is true. Yeah, but the Constitution established a civil municipal form of government, and it was engineered by high-level Masons, and you didn't hear. It would be really good if you could just listen to me reread this one citations group two here from U.S. Supreme Court Judge Thurgood Marshall. Can I do that, Dave?
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just a short paragraph here.
Well, I might give a point of order.
Sure.
I'm trying to look at things in the grander scheme of things, and I think what you might want to do instead, so that people can, like this gentleman who's come in, could refer to the audio tape and have him refer to him to certain point minute numbers or something like that, so that we can
re-listen to it.
Agenda.
Yeah. Your point of order is legitimate, David.
You don't have to read it, Charles. I'll read it to myself here. It's on the screen.
I think it really criticizes the slavery that continued. I'm glad you're with us, Daryl. I'm sorry that, you know, we got a few different views here on things, and I've routinely catch a lot of flack because I really am thinking outside the box in a lot of areas here, and I'm glad you're with us, Daryl. We should continue on, I think. Yes. Thank you for your point of order, David. Continuing on in our constructive notice of treason document. Page 4 has bold letters that talk about fraudulent declarations of emergency, which are purposefully designed to subvert constitutional government. Okay? Hereunder, this constructive notice of treason document. We, the complaining parties herein, have come to know that certain powerful private interest groups have usurped authority to bamboozle otherwise honorable public servants into capitulating to their subversive agenda, mostly by way of numerous declarations of emergency. These have been produced by our national executive officers, judicial courts, and legislative assemblies. All of these give color of legitimacy to multitudes of constitutionally lawless usurpations of powers that were originally intended to be preserved to our states, counties, and smaller communities of our common American people. Multitudes of these superficial declarations of emergency have been entered into America's various public records, and they're fairly easy to find, even in smaller local communities. These purported emergencies have been used as justification to work around the constitutional safeguards which have been guaranteed to we the people of our American nation. Hereunder, compromised and or corrupted judicial executive officers routinely gain just enough feelings of security in order for them to pretend that they are acting legitimately when they know that they are actually abusing the constitutionally guaranteed rights of our American people. This is all accomplished under conditions in which otherwise intelligent and generally conscience-bound honorable public servants can frequently be bamboozled or threatened into going along with. Hereunder, our common people's judicial environment has diverted from normal constitutional parameters under the rule of law. And hereunder, a breeding ground now exists in the courts of our American nation for the agents of the above-described powerful criminal syndicate to routinely obliterate constitutionally guaranteed rights of our common American people. The fact that these declarations of emergency are so epidemically widespread as to be profoundly and detrimentally affecting the lives of our common American people is reflected in a 1973 federal-level United States Senate report quoted partially in the accompanying citations document under Citations Group 1.
This is Daryl.
Yeah, Daryl.
Yeah. You ever hear the phrase that slaves complain and free people file claims? That really we have a claim of their abuses. And another thing, back up your document a little bit. There was one other thing. Their constitutional secured right. Because the Constitution don't guarantee us any right. They only guarantee that they would secure our rights. All rights are inherent from our Creator.
I don't think my wording detracted from our rights inherent from our Creator.
Well, I'm just saying where it talks about like guaranteed rights.
Their municipal corporation, the nature of their corporate franchise from the people was that they would guarantee respecting our natural rights from our Creator.
They would guarantee them secured.
Yeah. They guaranteed to secure and protect our constitutionally guaranteed rights.
That's all I'm pointing out is just that grant us. It only secures the right.
Well, I think you're getting tangled in minutia there that is not really of much benefit.
Okay, that's fine.
If I may, he may also be confusing granted and guaranteed. The Constitution does guarantee that our rights remain intact. And that they just screw up and leave us alone. However, the grant of rights is something that people, when they use the term constitutional rights, they are using it in the in the phraseology that the Constitution grants us the rights, gives us the rights, and that we otherwise don't have those rights as they are otherwise guaranteed unless the Constitution grants them to us. And so I think that this gentleman may be, as you said, stuck in the minutia between the word grant and guaranteed and kind of making them appear to be the same when, in my view, Charles, you are absolutely correct in using the terminology constitutionally guaranteed, because guarantee is different from the word grant, which is the word that this gentleman appears to be using.
Right. It gets taken in that perspective quite often, and it's really an improper perspective, you know, to... you hear it all the time, constitutional rights and all this kind of stuff, and that just stuck in my head to bring clarity to it, and I yield.
Thank you, Daryl, and thank you, David, especially David. Thank you for reaffirming the legitimacy of my choice of words there. I did think about it quite a bit, and I do think I'm on solid ground with my choice of words there, Daryl. But I appreciate you drawing it out there. This is a good discussion. These points need to be discussed. Are there any other comments or questions here before we move on? Hearing none. I'm going to continue going on through this document, unless there's objections. Anybody objection to me going through this document? I think this is a good study. It's the shot across the bow of the evil empire here. So, if there's no objection, I'll continue on. The United States Senate that United States Senate document. We discussed that before. Would you all like me to reread that, or can we gloss over that and continue on with my main treason document? Thomas, anybody, should I reread the United States Senate document for context there? Anybody need the context, or do you all know that that Senate document said, to just open it up, a majority of the people of the United States have lived all of their lives under emergency rule. For 40 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have, in varying degrees, been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency. Okay, that's the opening sentence. Should I continue on, or should I just proceed with the main document? We have read this before.
And I would think that most on this call are pretty much familiar with that document. Anyone can speak up if I'm incorrect.
Thank you, Lewis. I am inclined to continue reading on with the treason document. I think that opening sentence pretty much pretty much sets the tone for the whole thing. But
if I may.
And I think continuing reading the constructive notice of treason document draws out some of those points.
There was some was that I did hear it, if I may.
Yeah, that was David. I just wanted to say I'm good with whatever you want to do, but I have noted you may want to try to put your microphone just a little further away from your mouth, because it's popping a lot of peas and you know, exhales and things like that are all being picked up. I yield.
That's me you're probably talking to, right, David?
That's correct.
All right. I'll try to hold my microphone a little ways away further here like this. Continuing on, that United States Senate document clearly shows that the constitutionally guaranteed rights and liberties of every patriotic American are being abridged, quote, around the word abridged, through numerous official governmental declarations, which collectively add up to, quote, a permanent state of national emergency, unquote. That document clearly references a supposed prerogative of him who has the executive power to implement this constitutionally foreign mode of governing. The logic and reasoning behind these changes is that the legislature is too slow and contains too numerous of an amount of people in order to provide for all the accidents and necessities which may concern the public. It also mentions the common problem that the lawmaking power is not always in being. What's that about? Paul Andrew Mitchell has composed a book entitled The Federal Zone that talks about the entire de facto nature of the federal government, and that's within the parameters of the civil municipal constitution. They're outside of those parameters as originally established in 1789. And many of you are familiar with Paul Andrew Mitchell's work that talks about the federal zone, how they're entirely outside of the specific limitations of the municipal model of government that they established in 1789. The previous words of it's worthy of pointing out, and this relates to the efforts by the other good patriotic groups that I've been associated with, the Beacon 37 Republic Group, as well as the Destry and Rogers National Assembly Group, that I think both of those groups are looking towards returning back to basic. Well, no, they've both affirmed. Both of those groups have affirmed that the Articles of Confederation are superior to the Constitution document. Isn't that correct, gentlemen?
Well, it should be.
Yeah. I think amongst our group here, and even the Beacon 37 Republic group, as well as Destry and Rogers National Assembly group, I think they're at least all up to speed enough to know that the Articles of Confederation were superior and better than the so-called U.S. Constitution that came into effect in 1789. So, That's good, because the Articles of Confederation are basically a common law governing document, and we can work with that. They did have some problems, but no pain, no gain. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater just because there's a few problems here. And that's where we need to go, is back to the Articles of Confederation, which in turn would get us back to the Anglo-Saxon model of government. The Articles of Confederation should be interpreted in light of the Anglo-Saxon common law, pure common law model of government, wherein the National Assembly was referred to as the Assembly of the Wise Men, a.k.a. the Witan Gemot. They called it Witan Gemot. Gemot means assembly. Witan means wise men. That's what the assembly of the Anglo-Saxons prior to the Norman conquest was all about, because it was an assembly of the people. It wasn't an assembly of municipal Roman Empire franchisees that got to do what some written document tells them to do and nothing else.
Can I make a... What's the other point of whatever? It's not point of order, but point of what?
Information,
yeah. I'd like to get some information. This is directed, though, to Lewis. Lewis, you there?
I am.
Good. All right, I want to get your gut reaction as a black man to the just the words Anglo. What was the word you used, Charles? You just said it. I'm not reading with you, but
Anglo-Saxon.
Anglo-Saxon.
Or Anglo-American, wasn't it?
Okay.
Anglo-American,
well, if we have Anglo-American constitutional, you know, whatever, or Anglo-Saxon, when you're reading that in this context, in an academic kind of a context, or any other way, if you just hear it like I just heard it as I'm not reading it, what's your gut feeling as a black man feeling that in this in today's world of, you know, Black Lives Matters and all this stuff? Do you get a distaste in your mouth by hearing the word and put in this context?
We've actually had this conversation because Charles knows my feelings on that. So when, as Charles has done before, offered documents for reuse, editing, things along those lines. When we here on Wayne County went through the documents, such as the oath of office for that of qualified elector, any other documents, that was something that was removed. And this was before Black Lives Matter. For one like myself, it remains consistent with, and I'll just, you know, keeping it really simple, that a situation like the white man's ice is colder. You know, ice freezes at a certain, water freezes at a certain temperature. And Charles has pointed out before that this form of governance has been pointed out throughout history from various sources. However, when we begin writing, or for these documents, the Anglo-American or some type of variation of is used. Yeah, it's offensive. It's beyond getting kind of a gut punch. That's offensive language. So I don't deal. I remove it. And if one feels that if I'm, you know, interacting with the corporation and they feel that that's something that actually weakens the document, then that's their feeling. I'm very well prepared to stand on my square and my position, because I know that the Anglos borrowed, you know, even those here, the founders. I don't use phrases such as founding fathers. I tend to use framers, you know, of this government, of the Constitution. I don't. That's a phraseology and language that I don't use. And to me, it's offensive, you know, outside of half of them actually enslaving other human beings and knowing what that entailed, you know, in terms of the molestation, the rape, the confinement, the pedophilia, everything that went along with that. I think that entire plantation society is perverted. So that's why I think I've had a conversation before regarding with others, dynamic governance and non-offensive language, non-aggressive language, non-offensive language, and it's hard to do with our history and our background in this country. Use language that may not offend someone. So, but knowing that, I need to participate in the conversation and then explain that to people like yourself, David, that might ask, and others that might have an interest that might not ask. But yeah, that's a problem every time I hear it. I yield. Hope I answered your question.
Well, yeah, you did. If you hold on just a moment, Mike.
Sure.
I'll yield in just a moment. I'm looking at it from the standpoint of you know, if I'm at that, because I, all my life, I got to tell you, since my teenage years and all the time I've been trying to get into the employment world, I've come in on the backside of the baby boomer generation, and I've always been pushed down because I've been in at the poor sector myself, and And I've always been pushed down by the women's movement and this movement and that movement and the civil rights movement and you know, all the other stuff. And now, in today's world, I just trying to survive in today's world, I've been made to look like this white supremacist. I've been called a white supremacist and all this other kind of stuff. And if I am, and my son, who's in his early 20s now, is to find any pride in his own history, in American history, I am going to encourage at every opportunity that I can the true history, and whether we can find a better point of language or not, I don't know, but the existing language and the historical language is the use of the word Anglo-Saxon and the word Anglo-American, and that is our constitutional form of government, period. And, you know, so that's my position, and I will use every opportunity, whether it offends anybody or not, to use with pride the word Anglo when I'm talking about our constitutional history and my own ethnic background. I yield.
Okay, and if I may respond to that, I can appreciate that. I don't have an issue with that. I don't refer to our Constitution. You've never heard me refer to the Constitution in the words "are" anything, not from my mouth. So I think Charles mentioned earlier that some groups were, you know, considering at least the Articles of Confederation will show us their foundational document. I know that of the group formerly known as the Beacon 37 group, now known as the Republic with a K, I do know that. I don't know if that's the case with the group referring to themselves as the Assemblies. And I get that, David. I don't have an issue with that. And I've had this conversation before with where I've been at presentations where someone might have shared their documents that they created in their notices, and they used "I am" in the declaration of who they are, and this particular man went white, Christian, male. And he then began to assert whatever rights and make whatever statements he wanted to make. And there were those within the group that said, "That's racist." And I said, "No, that's what he is. That's what he is." So I get the truth aspect. I don't get Anglos claiming everything and that things didn't exist until they put it on paper. Put much more value in the written word as over the spoken word, and that's simply a cultural issue. And they believe that they can we can create something fictitious and put it on paper and basically bring it to life, put the value, use it commercially, do a number of things. Again, cultural, where one was of mouth. So I was surprised when you said that you've been called a white supremacist. You know, I know you. I don't see you as that. I don't want to get off topic and find out what in the world was the conversation at that time that you were called a white supremacist. But I feel that that was fine for you and your son. I feel that that is damaging for those of color when that is pushed on them as white being right, white the creator of, we did it. This is our form of government. We brought this government and this form of governance to this land when even the Constitution and the form of the Constitution was borrowed from the indigenous that were here. So as long as you keep it truthful, we have no issues. For you to say, you know, it's part of your heritage, I get it. Like I said, the man said, you know, in his paperwork, you know, white Christian male making this particular declaration, and that's not offensive to me. That's who he was. Or who he is. I think Charles mentioned earlier on this call regarding the atheists and the agnostics, even with if they could needed to take out the term God of nature. Wait a minute. Of nature's God. Okay. In the Declaration. He was referring to the Declaration of Independence. And with my documentation that I have provided in notices to the corporation, I use that exact term. That exact phrase, Charles, and I did not cross out the mark of nature's God. And you know that I would be one that would could be considered an agnostic or even atheist after being raised a Christian for the first 33 years of my life. So you know that, but I did not feel the need to cross that out because I felt that that was a very specific reference. Nature's God. I think you and I have had conversations before regarding religion. And one's religion is just that, theirs, not mine. So I would apply that to David and with you, your use of Anglo and your documents. They're your documents, not mine. But if you want me to use something that has that phraseology, that I will not do. Just as Charles said he would not change his style of writing, that I will not do. Because it's not mine, and it is not my heritage. Okay, so with that, I yield.
And I thank you very much for your candidness and your truthfulness. And I'll only finalize by saying, yeah, and I've even been called white honky. and that the circumstances on that are a whole different story. So
okay.
Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, David. I think this issue is an entangling issue. It is an issue that will inflame passions in a way that is not productive or functional. We must keep this issue in perspective. You know, America and all of its problems and all of its accusations is the nation that gave rise to the black president named Obama. It also now, it appears possibly that it has also elected the first female black, and I say potentially, vice president, because the election count has not been certified. The Electoral College has not voted, and there are multiple states being contested. So I think we need to keep this in perspective at all times, that America might have had a history of slavery, unfortunately. And I don't say might as if there is any possibility to that. It is a true fact. But the fact is, here and now, it is this nation and its people and its constitution has led to great freedom for a people formerly enslaved that now have growing power, growing unity. But those same people have also departed from their once Democratic Party and have shifted alliances to a more biblical and conservative viewpoint, being Republican or conservative, however you would want to identify it, in record numbers this election. So, again, perspective here, you know, and this issue is unnecessary at this juncture in this effort that we're trying to do. I think it's an entangling issue that will cause us problems, unnecessarily so. We have a common enemy. Go ahead.
Well, there's a couple of points of information because of the fact that this conference is being recorded. The term black has been hijacked. Barack Obama was or is an African-American. Okay, he is the product of an African father, Caucasian or white mother, that was raised by white grandparents in Hawaii. He had absolutely no exposure to what would be considered the black experience until moving to Chicago, working for Acorn, Okay, the community-based organization ACORN, and of course, Marion.
How is this relevant,
Marion,
to what I was saying?
Well, because you said the first president, and that's used often, and that's an era. Second point of information is an era. You referenced the perhaps let's call her vice president elect Kamala Harris as a black woman vice president. Kamala Harris is of Indian heritage. Both of her parents are of Indian heritage. Her father is of Jamaican nationality. So you use the phrase black with her as well. And that's why it's a point of information that was in the era. She is an Indian American with a Jamaican.
I stand corrected on her identity. I think most Americans would assume that, you know, she is identified as a black American, and I agree with what you just said. I have also heard that. I just had actually forgot about it, but she's a minority and a female. She's a double minority. So I do accept your correction, but the fact remains she's a double minority that now has potential, you know, vice president elected status. And this is huge. This is being accomplished in America, a nation that once had slaves, yes. But that is not what we are to focus on. We are to focus on the here and now, what we have accomplished, where we have come from, and where we are now. If we keep bringing up this issue, we're never going to get anything accomplished. And it's an entangling issue. It will cause us to be distracted and off track. And I think we need to be busy about finding how we can attract people to this movement of demanding redress, remedy, and remonstrance. I yield.
If I may. I believe, though, that what David brought up, the point, was very relevant. As you attract people, he asked me for my opinion or my feeling regarding certain language which is used. So as we look to grow, we're looking to be all-inclusive, I would suspect, and that means all-inclusive of all people, okay? And as such, the language used would be, you know, something that is obviously important. I thought that he was looking for feedback, and that was, in fact, very relevant. With that, I yield.
Well, if I may, I'm really speaking to both of you, not just you, and it's not in a harsh tone. It's in an advisory tone of friendship and unity and success. And I want that more than anything. I want us to succeed. And I think this is an issue we need to stay away from. We need to focus on what unites us, and that's the tyranny that we are facing, the corporate tyranny, the legal tyranny. It all makes for one ugly situation that we need to fix and stop and throw off. And by discussing these hot-button issues of cultural diversity, et cetera, we are going to stunt any growth we have. And I just think it's best we pursue the growth of this movement and how we can find people to unite with us and in our effort of remedying. So I yield. Thank you.
Well, since you're talking to me too, this is David. I'm going to disagree a little bit there, Mike, because I think that what just transpired between Lewis and I shows people how to properly address this matter without offending one another. Both Lewis and I think that we had appropriate conversation there that brought an issue to the table that is a hot item, so to speak, and we just demonstrated on this recording how it can be properly addressed and with respect to one another as friends and as equals. So I think that the more we as our group can circulate this type of where we're interfacing with one another in this way, that the more the better. I yield.
If I may, interaction, is that the word you were looking for?
Dialogue and or interface, and I think it was a combination.
I got too many things going on in my mind. Yeah, both of them.
if I may, though, you know, I would agree with everything you just said. That's a given. The interaction, the dialogue you just exhibited was excellent. It remained civil, and that's hard to find in today's political environment. Most of the time, that discussion leads to screaming, yelling, fights, bullets, death, etc. So I would agree with you there, but I think we need to caution ourselves and keep those discussions to a minimum. I think we would be better suited to address what unites us rather than what divides us, because we have far more greater in number of issues that unites us. And that, I think, would benefit us far more, and it would spend our time more valuable that way, too. That's all. I don't disagree with what you just said, David. I think you made an excellent point, and it's very valid, and it was a beautiful display of unity. Yeah, I agree. I yield. Thank you.
Well, if I may, this gets into Nikki's discussion, I think, at the very beginning of this conference call, and that deals with the fact that the founders of this Constitution chose not to address certain things. Maybe it was Charles that had read this, because it seemed to think that I was reading it at the same time, that the founders chose not to address certain negative things that were going on and chose to only focus on the positive things, and now that's a point of criticism here. So, you know, if it's a point of criticism for something that occurred a couple of centuries ago, then certainly if we do it now, it will be a point of criticism either now or, you know, in the future. So, go figure. I yield.
If I might, Charles here, love the discussion, love the free and open exchange of ideas and kind of hammering out consensus there. I think the root prompt of the discussion here is my routine reference to Anglo-Saxon traditions as the source of our common law and Anglo-American interpretations of constitutions and articles of confederation and things like that. And I think I've mentioned this to Lewis, and I've put it in my writings, I think, to some extent, but Mr. Blackstone has referenced that the hierarchy of the tens and fifties and hundreds and thousands, which are the community organizing foundational structure of common law, the Anglo-Saxon common law tradition. Mr. Blackstone referenced that those were also happening in Central American native tribes before the Roman Catholics came in and murdered them all. Okay? So this isn't just Anglo-Saxon. There were multitudes of communities that were doing this. At one time, we might have to go back to legends of Atlantis and Lemuria, you know, way back ancient history. It's only legend now. We don't know what all the obscure history is for all of these things. But this model of government that's referenced in Exodus 18 of the 10s and the 50s and the 100s and the 1000s, that continued on in the Anglo-Saxon tradition. And from Mr. Blackstone's reference of the Central American communities having it, it is clear that it wasn't just in ancient Israel, it wasn't just in ancient Anglo-Saxon common law England, it was also in Central America. And that indicates that it was probably pretty much worldwide before the Roman slave traders came in and started obliterating and destroying all of these smaller communities that were trying to responsibly self-govern in that manner. Okay? So my only concluding comment here is that it's a healthy discussion, and I love the way Lewis is just taking and editing out that kind of stuff. It's not about credit to the Anglo-Saxons. It's about establishing our responsibly self-governing communities. And anybody of any ethnic background that wants to embrace this, God bless you. God bless you, because you're doing righteous, godly work in promoting righteous, responsible, self-governing communities, and that's the bottom line. That's all we need to worry about. And Michael, with all due respect, I appreciate your concerns, and it can get inflammatory, like what you're concerned about, but I do think that these kind of discussions are part of the pain that we must endure as long as we're keeping it respectful. I don't like that word, civil. But as long as we're keeping it respectful, calm tones of voice, this is healthy stuff. We'll get back on track, you know. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. I appreciate the discussion. I would like to get back to the treason document, but I'll yield here in case we want to talk a little bit more about this issue. I yield.
Well, if I may, I would agree with the word civil. I used that inadvertently, and I agree with you completely. It's not something we would want to use. But I would like to see us talk about. I know it's been 2 hours now. It's 7 o'clock, and I would like us to talk in the after call about the current situation with the vote count, the illegalities that are being discovered, the conspiracy to defraud the vote that is being discovered. The evidence is appearing to be voluminous, and I think it would be very valuable for us to discuss this. I yield.
Thank you, Michael.
This is David.
Yeah, David.
Just wanted to say thank you, Charles. That was a great conclusion comment that you added there at the end. Mike, you just got through saying a word that I know Nikki has some contention with, and that is the word current. I'm right, Nikki. I just wanted to let you know that I am trying to get something done, and I probably will not be hanging on much beyond 7 o'clock here. So it's been a real good a discussion for me anyway tonight. I wanted to thank Lewis and Daryl for also being on, and for Lewis's exceptional work handling the screen visuals and everything as well, and Nikki, thank you.
Thank you, David.
I'm here giggling, David. Currently.
All right. Is this a good place to, Lewis, is this a good place to end our 2-hour business meeting here?
It is.
Okay. This is 2020, November 14th. I am Charles Stewart. This is the formal conclusion of the business portion meeting of our conference call here. And we invite everybody to hang on for after call discussion. But we are hereby formally drawing to a conclusion our business portion of our discussion here. So, Lewis, are you going to be able to hang on with us here a little bit, or do you got to run too?
I'm going to have to drop off in about just a few minutes. Within the next 10 minutes, I'll just mute myself right now.
Okay. Okay.
If I may, Nikki. Yeah, I just want to sum up what you guys were saying. I mean, they thought of this back in 1776, and there's the solution or the problems of past governments and the solutions right there in the first paragraph. Dissolve the political bands and assume amongst the powers of the earth a separate and equal station to which we're entitled, and declare the causes which impel to the separation. 1, 2, 3, problems and remedies, right there, first paragraph. When in the course of human events, and that's what we're in now, a course of human events we've never been in before.
And, hear, hear.
With that, I yield. Simplicity. Bring it down to the roots. Thank you.
Hear, hear.
Thank you, Nikki. Michael, you've obviously got the election heavy on your mind, and with both David and Lewis taking their exits here soon. Maybe it would be good to go ahead and let you express your concerns here. Maybe they'll hang on a little bit and share a little bit.
Well, anyway,
go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. The fact is that if this election is overturned, it will lead to I'm sure widespread violence, and who knows what else. It could make the previous uproar look like a picnic, and this could be a very serious matter. I believe either way it goes, it's going to be a very serious outcome for the losing side, and it will have long-ranging repercussions, hopefully for the good. But the evidence that is coming forth is really only being found on one channel, and that's Fox Business with Lou Dobbs and Maria Bartiromo. She's had Sidney Powell on once, but Lou Dobbs has had a couple different people on that have been revealing this evidence regarding the Dominion voting machines manufactured by the Smartmatic company. That's the same company that Hugo Chavez hired back around 2003-2004 to steal his elections. And it was a couple guys, Venezuela guys that were living in Miami that were hired to build them. And since that time, they have been selling the machines in the United States. I believe 28 states out of the 50 have used the machine or are using the machines. All of the swing states have been using the machines. The fact is what they're finding is great inconsistencies in vote injections into the system. They're finding thousands of votes with the same outcome for Biden in multiple places, primarily Michigan and Wisconsin is what I've heard. And I'm only repeating what Sidney Powell and others working with these states are saying. She's being very definitive and forthright and powerful in her statement that these people will be caught. This will be exposed, and people will go to jail. This is what she's saying. Also, what is very interesting is three servers that accommodate this network of voting machines are located out of the country. There's one in Germany, one in Spain, and one in Canada. This in itself is just unbelievable, And when Lou Dobbs found this out, he about came unglued, and he became very angry, and rightly so. But we've been, you know, many activists around the country have been talking about this issue for at least 10 years.
If I may, Mike, just one moment. David, please,
sure.
If you can hang on a little bit longer, please, I'd like it. You're in Oakland County, so on Michigan, I'm on Wayne County. I'd like, after Mike concludes, to get some feedback, and I want to ask you a couple of questions. So with Mike, thank you for that. I yield the floor.
Okay, no problem.
Sure. So just in conclusion, there is growing, evidence to support the fraudulent nature of the outcome in the vote. And, it's going to be very interesting. No states have certified yet. The Electoral College has not voted yet, of course. But you hear the media constantly identifying Mr. Biden as, president-elect, which he is not. And this is a very telling scenario in itself. So we all know who the media is for. We all know that they're the enemy of the people, enemy of truth, and that includes Fox News. Fox News is not to be trusted, but Lou Dobbs is a very interesting man. He is a populist by nature for the most part, and he, I believe he's an honest man, and he's not controlled. And that's evidenced by, who he has on his show and what they talk about. And I would put Maria Bartiromo in that same category for the most part. I've been watching Lou for far more many years than Maria, but I think it's very interesting. And Fox Business, every day, Monday through Friday, Lou is on at 5 p.m. Eastern and at 7 p.m. Eastern, a rerun. So that's all for now. I don't think I missed anything. Let me look at my notes here real quick. Sidney Powell, she also referred to this as the new American Revolution. She says every day, all day, affidavits and witnesses are pouring in faster than they can accommodate. Someone from an Illinois review board gave testimony to the fraudulent nature in Cook County. I think that's pretty much it. Trucks with boxes of thousands of ballots were backed up to the buildings on election night, witnessed by multiple people who filed affidavits and eyewitness testimony. They were backed up to the buildings, dropping off boxes of ballots with out-of-state license plates. That's all I have, and I'll yield for the next person. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. If I may. Lewis of Michigan here. I had just been asked by another friend, John of Massachusetts, to take a look at a couple of videos regarding this this conspiracy regarding these vote switching, and specifically the Dominion voting machine. And I've got yet to confirm, because I've got also information that Oakland County specifically doesn't use the Dominion voting machine. I'm not on Oakland County, but I looked at this one of these videos, and it was over an hour in length. And what it showed to me, was typical manipulation of graphics on a chart. Now, and I know this was done by a Dr. Shiva. I hope I'm pronouncing his family name properly. And of Massachusetts, and it presented misinformation. It presented misinformation in the terms of the number of counties on Michigan. It presented slanted information, not misinformation, in terms of the precincts reporting. It was just slanted to the points that Phil Evans, the one that put together the presentation and the graphics, it was Phil Evans' presentation, the points that he chose to emphasize. And I can't speak of any of the other states. I can only speak of here in Michigan and what happened downtown Detroit, which was one of the voting centers, which was something that I heard of this alleged truck backing up with mostly Democratic ballots, which would happen here on the land of Detroit and Wayne County. There would be mostly Democratic ballots even as was emphasized in this particular video. But I say this to say that these videos really aren't producing, the ones that I've seen, raw data evidence of voter fraud. It's not there. And I've been following it along here, and the Attorney General of Michigan, Dana Nessel, I know not David's favorite at all, but the one thing statement that she was accurate about, that she came out and said this past week, that where these cities where these lawsuits are targeted, the Detroit, the Wayne County, the Ingham County, Detroit specifically, Wayne County, because Detroit is an 80% black city. Ann Arbor, which is in Washtenaw County, went overwhelmingly for Biden, more so than Wayne County. But they dare not go to Ann Arbor and make the same type of challenge there. They don't want to do that in Ann Arbor, in Washtenaw County. But they do that in Detroit, in Wayne County, or they'll do that in Ingham County, which has Lansing, Michigan, or they'll do that in certain other counties that where Flint is, a Genesee County. And to my knowledge, he's like 1 for 19 thus far on the 20 lawsuits that have been filed, 1 win, 19 losses. So, and I know here in Michigan, he's going to lose. With Wayne County, it's a wrap, because there was nothing. Everything was done with transparency here, even more so. They allowed more people in to view the ballot counting than they were to do so. Like 34, you know, I was watching it as it was going on. So it is going to be really interesting as this moves forward. I think that they're people that are, I guess, dealing with the fact that there's 75 million people or more that really dislike the president, and were really, as Van Jones, one of the CNN people, just made a just got very emotional. I thought even a bit much. On air regarding how the other 70 million people are still supporting the man. So with we talk about divisive topics, and that of the ethnicity and the racial climate of the country being a divisive topic, as is the 45th president. And there were people that are waited.
Point of information. It's not the president. It's what he stands for. We conservative Christians strongly believe in biblical principles being implemented in our government. And he stands for these things. And it's not the president. It's what he stands for. And biblical truth is a divider. And more black Americans are waking up to the fact that their Democratic Party is hostile to Christian principles. That is a proper perspective.
That is fictitious. That right there is a Fox talking point. That is not happening. He lost his 93% to about 7% here Detroit, which is the largest county of Wayne County, and is an 80%
black abort city. Babies. Lewis, Christians can't believe in aborting babies, and more black people are finding this
that
out.
Has multiple wives that has had affairs on each of his wives, one with a porn star while his wife was pregnant, carrying his child. I don't get. How a Christian then would turn around and support this type of human being in any office. I'm a dog catcher. How could one support him in any office? The man has slept with multiple porn stars and others. He's got multiple wives. I don't get it.
if I may, gentlemen. I
this,
appreciate.
By the way, I'm a non-Christian, so I yield, Charles.
Thank you. Both of you, I appreciate the discussion. I don't think the abortion issue is the bellwether for deciding who's a Christian and who's not. I agree abortion is way too easily available, and it promotes promiscuity in healthy male-female relationships. But I don't think that's the bellwether indicator. And Mr. Trump, I think, is immensely preferable to Mr. Biden, okay, on the record. But I think Mr. Trump is a very poor example of a Christian. And
okay, point of information, yes. I never use Mr. Trump as an example of Christianity. He is a new believer, I am of the opinion, and he has expressed, you know, a newfound faith, and, you know, who are we to judge? I mean, everybody's under construction. We're at different stages. And as far as abortion being the bellwether, no, but homosexual belief systems is definitely a divider, a bellwether issue. And if you believe in that, it's impossible to call yourself a Christian. And this is a paramount doctrine of the Democratic Party, and more black Americans, are Christian Americans, are finding this out to be inconsistent with their Christian faith. And this is why you're seeing a big shift of black church members away from the Democratic Party. It might not be in the huge numbers that are identifiable yet, but I definitely have talked to them, I have seen them, and it is happening. I yield to the point of...
If I may, Charles, I must respond to that on a couple of ways. And then I don't want... And then I want to hear from David, who's on Oakland County. I'm on Wayne, but Oakland County was one of those counties that was used as an example in of this voter fraud example. Regarding the black churches, and let me say this. There are black people leaving the Christian faith in droves. In droves. So many are Hebrew Israelites. Others turn into go with Muslim. But the Hebrew Israelites, there is a commonality there, of course, obviously, being Hebrew. So, and they have issues with this entire voting process. Many, not all. I don't want to speak as if that's a monolithic group at all. My mother's Hebrew. Okay, so there are others that are outside of that. I know others that I've known for years that were Christians and that are now Hebrews. So, again, Mike, I would ask you to look to some other sources. Your sources of information appear to be limited to certain sources. Okay, look at some other sources regarding, you know, the people that you would refer to as black people, because, number one, certainly not all Christian. They're leaving the Christian religion in droves. You've got to look for at some of the other religions and what they're doing. And also, please believe, not all of us are religious. Okay, you know that. You're talking to one. So please keep that in mind.
If I may respond, that's your mistake, not mine. And if you choose to be non-religious, you choose to, you know, fail. Just that simple.
Okay, see, that's where it becomes... That's where it becomes non-productive, when one becomes judgmental. Those that are religious tend to be the most judgmental beings walking the planet. And if you could just put that in your back pocket for a moment, let me share something. I'm 54 years old. I was a Christian for the first 33 years of my life. It's not a mistake. It was a conscious, logical decision. Now, We do. But that's what I'm stating. I don't need to point that out. Your religion is just that, yours, not mine. Do not attempt to subject me to it. Okay, I don't need the witnessing or anything else along those lines. If we could stay focused, see, that's where we need to stay focused, where you believe a discussion regarding ethnicity or racial relationships within this country is divisive, as so is religion. And we cannot put one on the shelf without visiting the other. Now, I'm very tolerant. As a non-religious man, I'm very tolerant. You never once heard me say, hey, I object to us having this prayer. Or I object to us using the language of, you know, by God or under God. Or no phone call that you've ever heard me participate in have I objected to, you know, anyone's faith. I find that the people of faith tend to be less tolerant of others. Now, that's the fact
tolerant of error. I agree.
Ooh, okay. See, and you don't see that as judgmental, and actually some would call a violent language. That is not nonviolent language. That's why I've had conversations with others that said it's impossible to deal with an American, because you saying that you are one is in error, you are standing in judgment of another. You just
right.
not 5 minutes ago said that you weren't going to stand in judgment of others, but now you've just done so.
No, the judgment's already been made by God's word. I'm just passing it along.
No.
I happen to agree with the word of God.
That's fine for you.
You're the one that's a hostile person here in response. I simply just made a declaration, and you're the
and
one
Michael,
who's been out of shape.
Michael, may I?
You respond, then you were surprised, you know, when I acted as I was offended by you passing judgment. See, that's the issue.
This is Daryl. I'd like to chime in a little bit. I missed the first part here, but I don't know if anybody can hear me.
Yeah, Daryl.
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the Bible mentions it mentions religion and religious 7 times, and it has over 3 pages of righteous and righteousness. But, you know, the Bible says, let your judgments be righteous judgments. As God has already judged the world, He laid out His principles. But Lewis, you mentioned that you're not religious, but I guess what principles would you say are not correct that are professed in the Bible or in Scripture?
Oh, I don't say that anything is incorrect. I believe that it is the Bible is more so an instruction manual for those that need it to it does certain things. I mean, it's got portions of it which might tell a family that is Christian how to raise their child, how to do certain things. It also refers to slavery, though, and how a slave should respond, or one that is enslaved should respond to their quote-unquote master, which I see as an enslaver. My issue really with the Bible starts with Genesis. No one has ever asked me what I believe in terms of my principles they see. People have known me for years, and they see how I carry myself. They see my family. They know where I've come from. So in terms of values, morals, and principles, I present those on a daily basis, and they're not given to me even via scripture. But that said, I think that those that believe that the Bible is factual, and this might offend some, and I don't intend to do so. I try to watch my language, which I sometimes get offended when those of faith do not watch theirs. But anyone that would believe that the Bible, as opposed to putting together as a group of stories and fables for instruction, and they look at that as factual, no, I question. And even in Genesis itself, the very first book of the Bible, it actually, I believe, refers to multiple beings. So if anyone says, well, Lewis, then what do you believe in? I would believe in intelligent design. So what does that mean? That means that I believe that what you refer to as God is not one being. It is multiple beings, and God may have been the chief surgeon, if you will, of a surgical team that came and altered the mammal being that was existing on this planet. Which, what does that mean, Lewis? Well, then that means God has to be an alien. And I don't want to discuss with any people of faith whose alien superpower is more powerful than the other, or which one is real and which one is fictitious. I don't choose to do that. That, I believe, is a waste of my time. Now, that's why I look to common grounds. Understand, my wife is Christian. My mother is Hebrew. I look for common grounds. Okay? I get it. I think I've given this example, Charles, on one of our other calls. Maybe it was a Wayne County call, whereas I believe in things like infinite wisdom, meaning that as subconsciously, all of us as humans have the ability to tap into a universal knowledge, if you will. It may be done in a dream state. So if I've got a problem on my mind and I'm really giving that some thought and I go to sleep and I've got this on my mind and I wake up and my subconscious is working on this problem and I wake up with a solution to that problem, which is crystal clear. I mean, it's so clear that I can't figure out why I didn't come up with it the day before. So I would think now that that was me tapping into infinite knowledge. A Christian may say that, you know, they prayed on that and the solution was shown to them by their God. I'm not going to argue with that. I'm going to say, good, let's go. So I don't want to argue if their supreme being is Jesus, Yahweh, Buddha, or anybody else, if they believe that that makes them a better human being on this earth, at this time, in this place, then let's do that. I'm in agreement. But do not force that on me. And I won't force my thought and my belief on you. And let's move forward.
Lewis, can I ask you a question?
Yes, Daryl, and I asked David to remain on the line, which he's done. And I really wanted to, because I wanted to say is what's happening in Oakland County with regards to any that you know of, any evidence of voter fraud. That's what I wanted, because that's what we were talking about, and that's I'm on Wayne, you're on Oakland. I wanted to know anything that you know regarding that. And then, Daryl, I want to come back. I will come back to you. So please hold your thought. I just don't want to hold David any further.
Thank you, David. Lewis. Thank you. Well, and since I sat through the last half hour of this other conversation, and I did want to just say that I found it interesting. Number one, I think that as the world turns and all peoples of the world are exposed to the sun shines on everybody and equally, you know, depending on the clouds. But, and so, you know, I found it interesting that Mike had said that, you know, he found error. I think he even used the word with Lewis's way of thinking or believing or whatever, and then Daryl chimes in to ask Lewis why he has found error, and that was the word he used in the biblical thinking of, you know, maybe of Michael or in general. And I don't comprehend sometimes how how Christians, as limited as human brains are, how they can comprehend that in the course of just a few moments, how one person's, whether you want to call it bigotry or whatever, is or skewed view of somebody else, forced view of somebody else, or anything like that, how that can be understood by some other person as just the opposite. And anyway, I think that Lewis handled himself very well in answering that question without saying what I would have said about that type of behavior from both people. So with that being said, I'll answer Charles Lewis's question for everybody in saying that I'm stocking up on popcorn, because this whole thing is getting to be really freaking interesting. You know, I only try to speak from personal experience, and I haven't had any personal experience with this election. And I have been reading on both sides of the equation with regard to the fraud issue. And but what I do have personal experience with is the corruption of the state of Michigan and the people running the state of Michigan, which includes those people who are conducting all the election, purported election fraud. What I know for a fact is that Michigan is number 50 on the public integrity list here of being the most corrupt state in the United States. And in my particular circumstance with regard to my disability, my recent disability, I have been battling the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, which I have come out with outwardly in presenting stuff to the Michigan governor, the Michigan Attorney General, which it's just the opposite of what Lewis said. She's not just not on my favorite list. She's on my SHIT list, because I have been reporting crimes occurring by the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, and which is under the direction of Gordon, Tom Gordon, Robert Gordon. And I have just come to find out in the last couple of days that Robert Gordon has been nominated or is scheduled to slide into the office under Biden as the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So it seems to me like just the opposite. The worst crimes that you create under this existing deep state, especially here in Michigan, the more you're rewarded for it. And it just so happens that most of what I've been seeing has been aligned or malaligned with the Democratic Party being the one to commit these crimes. And I qualify that by the fact that throughout the 2000s, I was finding that the so-called rule of law judges, as I was focused on the executive and judicial branches here in Michigan, that the rule of law judges were the ones that I found were being the most corrupt, and they were Republicans. They were also part of the Federalist Society, that is a national group. So to answer the question of what's going on in Oakland County is to me, it's irrelevant to the fact that we all know what's going on in Wayne County. Wayne County can't be more corrupt. It just can't. And Oakland County and the rest of Michigan is most of the people in power in Lansing are coming filtered through Wayne County. So whether it's on the Supreme Court of Michigan, because I've been looking at this situation for a long time,
There's a boatload that are coming right through Wayne County and all this corruption in Wayne County, and they are filling these positions throughout Michigan, Lansing, and as a result, the whole freaking state is corrupt, and I'm just getting out. I know it's corrupt, and why would it be corrupt and the election process not be? I know it.
That, now that's a good point. Now that's a very good point. Now to speak to it, what's happening coming out of Wayne County, though, believe it or not, on this conspiracy theory video, Wayne County was the one county that he said that the algorithm was not applied to.
Point of information. When I began this conversation, I was not speaking of any videos. I was speaking of hardcore evidence that has surfaced with affidavits and eyewitnesses. In addition, in the state of Pennsylvania, a judge has overruled what the legislature passed as law by allowing ballots to be counted long after the law said they were to not be. That has been reversed. So there's a lot more to this than a video. I did not mention anything about a video.
Okay. I spoke specifically of a video that from a Dr. Shiva that another friend had asked me to view regarding the voter fraud that I did take the over an hour to view. So that's the video that I did mention that. Regarding the ruling in Pennsylvania, that was the one win that I did reference. I said that Trump was 1-19, one win, 19 losses. That was the one win. All other of his 20 cases thus far he's taken the L on, including here in Michigan, twice. So, again, that doesn't stop him from moving forward with others, and that's fine. So when I ask people for evidence, I'm often referred to videos. And as I mentioned to Charles earlier, I look for raw numbers. With the affidavits here in Michigan, his lawyers actually, once they were on the stand and under oath and under questioning, had to reverse their statements each time of the two cases thus far that have been here on Michigan. When they said that there weren't people in the room or weren't enough witnesses in the room, there was another statement. So both times, those that had come forward with the affidavits, which supported the lawsuit itself, were proven wrong on the stand.
Lewis, I'd like to say one more thing before I leave here. And that is because you're bringing up, things going on in Wayne County and Michigan. I got to see, somebody sent me a link, I think it was Mike, that sent me a link to the hearings that were going on in Michigan with regard to Trump's attorney, Kelman or something like that, and the judge was Kenny. I think it was Michael Kenny, Kenny, Judge Kenny, K-E-N-N-Y. That guy, I have personal proof, and I presented this in 2016 in my federal case, proving that judge, Timothy Kenny, that was his name, Timothy Kenny, that guy is so freaking crooked. I've got criminal allegations out against him with evidence. Of course, nobody's given me the time of day on it because I don't have the power. I just have the evidence. And so just in this small group, I'm going to just let you know that I saw Timothy Kenny, who I have criminal allegations out against, along with supporting evidence, thanks to Trish Krause and Cornell Squires and others, when I was sitting in the Midland County Jail, they presented me with the evidence that I needed to see that this guy committed crimes against me and against the people of the Wayne County and the state of Michigan. And so just to qualify any proceedings that go in front of him, and I do understand that the Trump team lost on that particular thing in front of Timothy Kenney. You know, again, that guy is a criminal, and the whole system is corrupt, and you can't win anything. I tried for about 15 years of trying to go do the right thing in this system, and you can't. It is so corrupt. I yield.
Thank you for that. And I remember that time when you were in Midland, and I know both Chris, Trish, and Cornell. And I didn't know that that judge was involved in that. That's unfortunate that he's got that in the past, in my opinion. And he's the judge that happened to be pulled on this particular case, because I recall that everything that you just mentioned.
Yeah, I got, and I'll tell you one more thing about Timothy Kenney is that when I first moved to Michigan, I started attending the Northville Northridge Church in Plymouth, and I got into the men's ministry on this one particular day where Timothy Kenney was a purported one of the elders of that church, and they were holding a men's ministry where he was on this panel, and I was going through all this hell as a new resident here in Michigan, as a school teacher and as a crime victim, and I went to Timothy Kenney afterwards, and I said, would you help me here in this situation? Because I don't understand what the hell is going on in this, you know, with this judicial system that is treating me this way. And, you know, he gave the standard, well, I can't help. I can't get involved. You know, I'm a judge and all this other kind of crap. But he also, in that process, had revealed to me that he really wasn't a member of the church either anymore. He had left the church. He wasn't even an elder at the church. And the bottom line was, this guy was, he's a total liar, you know? And anyway, his reason for not getting involved is the standard BS reason, and that is because they don't want to rock the boat of the status quo of the corruption that put money in all their pockets. I yield, got to go, and I bid everybody a wonderful weekend. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, David.
Bye-bye.
It looks like Michael dropped off. I don't know if he dropped accidentally or perhaps he got frustrated a little bit. But Daryl's still with us, and Nikki's with us, and Lewis is with us.
Lewis,
before I take my leave, I did want to. Daryl was talking, and before we yield the floor to David, I do need to take my leave as well. But Daryl, I wanted you to finish your, line of questioning or wherever you were going with that.
Yeah, I was going to ask. You mentioned something about Genesis where you didn't agree, or you thought?
Oh no, it wasn't that. I thought it was. I often point to a particular verse in Genesis that I believe supports intelligent design, and it's more than one. And I don't recall it right off the top of my head, but it's something like, "Let us go down and confuse their language." I believe Genesis 1, maybe around verse 8, somewhere around there, where God is referring to themselves as us. And I've had that conversation with other Christians in the past and heard their explanation of us and the Trinity in some type of form. And I believe us is actually literal, that there is more than one. And
Creator or more than one?
Yes, more than one creator. No, more than one creator right then. In Genesis, I believe that it gives evidence of more than one creator. It does not name the number of us, but us goes down to confuse the language, you know, when there was one language and then make it four or more. And it starts, if you just the first, within the first 10 verses of Genesis, I believe that the evidence is there, which supports the concept of intelligent design, because within the DNA of humans, there is a certain number within the strand which is considered alien to the planet, and we're the only ones that have it. So although we share DNA with everything organic, the trees, the grass, the dirt, the every animal and everything else to varying degrees, there is a certain number of DNA which is alien to the planet itself, and it exists only within humans. And that is, I believe, this is a phrase that even a singing group of my wife, they did a song like this. They called the title of the song is "It's the God in Me." So actually, I do believe if that alien DNA is what they're referring to as the God in them, then everyone, every human being actually has some God in them and is connected in some way, shape, or form. When we start talking about God as He, a singular entity, especially given a male gender, that's when I have to take my leave, because that's not a position that I'm in agreement with. So I don't like to get into, you know, what part of the Bible do you not agree with? That's not the issue, because I have certain beliefs about the Bible being manipulated over the years for certain causes, as public education and as other things. But, you know, my issue is at a different level. So, but I don't want to argue with others because, again, if they believe that they need to, their supreme being needs to be named this, that, or the third, I don't want to debate that. I don't ever want to get into a debate with people of faith because I'm a member of the Church of Reality. So I don't want to debate with a member of faith. Let's talk about something that affects all of us right now, the air that we breathe, okay, the land that we're on, the food that we eat, okay, the policing agency that we're subjected to, housing, and then talk policies and what have you, which is why I don't like to do the religious conversation. It's not beneficial.
I think it's very edifying because I think the Bible is really the living word, which is to be applied in our daily life and to apply those principles. And yes, I do also believe that, you know, that in the translations, there was a little bit of manipulation. I think that was maybe done for selfish reasons, maybe. Or
sure.
Selfish reasons or however a guy wants to look at it. But a lot of times, you know, we look at scriptures, and I've looked at some myself that, you know, I've read over and over, and they just did not make sense until I seen it from a different perspective. But just like in the, you talked about the first 8-10 verses of Genesis, where God said he created light, and he called the light capital D day, and he called the night capital N night. In the evening and the morning were the first day. But he did not create the sun, the moon, and the stars until the fourth day. So what light did he create on the first day? That's the question.
No, I get it. I get it. So I don't. I tend to not engage in those conversations. I get it for those that do. Again, I was raised in the Christian environment. I get the Bible study concept. At this time, though, after 33, when I actually found that I could actually read the Bible online, see, I can sit in front of a computer and read text on a computer for 14 hours straight. When it's in a book format, the printed format, and I hold my head a certain way, it literally put me to sleep within 30 minutes.
Boy,
so
that's
at that time,
that's opposite for me.
Is it the opposite for you?
Oh,
okay,
100%.
See, so, at that time, back in, I think this was about, I don't know, whatever year it was when I turned 33, I went and grabbed the Bible that my grandmother gave me, who understand was Sunday school teacher in the church that I grew up in. She was one of the founding members way back in like 1956. So understand, in my family, that's just what you were going to do. So I went and grabbed the Bible that she gave me, like when I was 13, to compare, because I didn't want to see that the internet had changed anything. So I'm sitting here with I'm talking all the way up to like 3 o'clock in the morning. My wife wake up like, what are you doing? What are you listening on? I'm like, the Bible is online, because I didn't know that. So when I found that and I read it, my position changed. So when people say, well, why did you decide? I said, yeah, I read the Bible. And I decided, no. Along with other sources, and formed my own opinion and did not pass judgment on any others. And believe me, I'm the guy that talks to the Jehovah Witnesses when they're out witnessing, when others would kind of cower, don't open the door or whatever. I would talk to them at length till they would actually leave, like, okay, we've got to go elsewhere. When they're selling their Watchtower pamphlets, I would do that all the time. Anyone that wanted to discuss, some family members actually, obviously, got upset, with my conversation. But I'm very comfortable in my position. I don't try to alter others to my position. I leave it at that. People still try to change my position. That's and they're typically the religious. And I said, listen, this is not productive use of our time. Okay, my position is very firm. Okay, it's not something. It wasn't based upon some outside influences. I've never been one that has really been influenced from outsiders. My motivation has always come from within. I've always been my own authority. Which has kind of landed me in some positions that, over the years, which led me to where I am now, with even starting with traffic and speed limits. I've always thought they were suggestions, so I just don't like to, and Daryl, I'm not trying to squash our conversation. The thing is that, my position I won't move from regarding this matter, so I try to limit the conversation because I don't feel that it's productive use of our time.
Well, that's fine. I guess all I was pointing out is you mentioned that, and I brought the, maybe some misunderstanding, that I had of, like, the first day of creation, how it talks about that in two spots. Well, in Hebrews chapter 11, it talks about that all things that were seen by that, all things that are seen were created by that which is not seen, where God is spirit. And so in the first day of creation, the spiritual world was created before the physical world. And that's all I was pointing out, and I yield. And I'm going to have to go here shortly. So.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. Thank you for the cut.
Thank you both. Nice discussion. I would like to point out just briefly, I do believe sincerely in Christianity personally, but I like to keep the discussion focused on the tangible real world realities that Lewis so well focuses on. And if we can gently nudge Lewis back towards Christianity again, that's great. If not, then that's okay too. Lewis has shown to me his sincerity in seeking truth and justice for our common people and responsibly self-governing. And so I like to throttle back on pressuring Lewis on trying to accept Christianity or anything, because that'll come in due time if those of us that profess Christianity actually show that we are sincere about pursuing godly righteous truth and justice for our common people. And I find a lot of professed Christians way, way, way behind the curve in standing up for truth and justice. Okay? So And that doesn't include yourself, Daryl. I know that you're sincere about your Christianity, and you're doing the best you can with your activities in the Beacon group. And I do hope you return in this group too to kind of broaden out your sphere of influence. You have a voice in this discussion always, if you care to rejoin with us. And I want to thank you both, and Nikki here. Well, it looks like Lewis wrapped up too. But Nikki and Daryl, you're the only two with us here. I'll yield comments or questions from any of you. Hearing
I had a thought, and I don't know what it was again. I just...
Okay.
Hi, Daryl.
Well, I'm really glad I'm glad you're jumping in and participating with us in our conference.
I know what I was going to say. You know, without absolutes of absolutely right or absolutely wrong, without the Bible, without Scripture, everything would be relative. So what I believe is right is fine. What you believe is right, what everybody else believes is right, it's right within their own heart. There's no absolute. So without the Word of God that was given to us for edification and for learning and for application in our life, if we don't have that, we have no absolutes and we are without direction. And I yield.
Well, if I might, the Bible was not completed when Jesus walked this earth, and Jesus had moral absolutes. Okay? So I beg to differ with your summary there, Daryl.
Well, I guess he said he wrote the law upon our hearts. So, you know, there was a lot that was taught in the Old Testament, you know, which the Old Testament prophesied, you know, of a Savior who would be born and would come. And the New Testament, you know, revealed the fulfillment of all those prophecies. And
Right. They're
pretty much filled to this day. They're, you know, still are a few that are, I believe, are very close. And I yield.
Well, thank you, Daryl. And if I might address that point from a little bit different angle, there are many cultures in older times, you know, probably about the founding of this nation or something, where there have been lots of cultures that did not have Christianity and the Bible available to them. But I think there have been within many of those cultures honorable men that had moral absolutes. The moral absolutes that you refer to is the difference between good and evil. It's the difference between aggression and being peaceable and respectful. Those are the moral absolutes. And those, the Bible only is a tool for fine-tuning those moral absolutes. It's a reference manual to how to make the machine work. You can still run the machine without the Bible. Lots of cultures have had honorable men that have clearly stood on moral absolutes between good and evil. And I think you're in error, with all due respect, when in summarizing that moral absolutes are somehow impossible without the Bible.
I never said they were impossible. I know the, like the Indian culture and stuff like that, you know, they always talked about, you know, the mighty one or the great one. I mean, they talked about in a little different structure, but, you know, it was written on their heart. They followed what they knew, you know, by their intuition, you know,
right,
that God gave them. And, you know, so the people that lived, you know, before Christ, when the communication was, you know, a little bit different than it is, a whole lot different than it is today. But, you know, I think, I don't know, you know, people lived in their culture, and their culture, you know, knew right from wrong as it was written in their heart.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of cultures, so to speak.
And if I may add, Yeshua himself said in Matthew, Matthew 5:17, I think it is, I came not to change anything but to fulfill. So, you know, he didn't change anything from the Old Testament. He came to fulfill it because he did not contract. He was offered the world and all that is in it. And he says, hey, no, I will not bow down to you. So, I mean, that's our lesson right there. All law is contractual from the beginning of time. We've got to figure out where our contracts are and how we were persuaded to enter into them, because obviously they were, not with full disclosure. We know that now. And by the way, let me ask you, as long as I have the mic here, do you know anything about bills of exception?
Are you asking Daryl or myself?
Both of you. Anybody who wants to answer? Bills of exception or bill of exception.
I've never really, I didn't know that I'd be capable of defining it accurately or well enough.
Okay. All right. Bill of exceptions are in the legal, you know, in the legal realm. And and the reason I'm asking is that I have a tax issue, and I am, you know, bringing it forward because they want to take the property and everything, you know, for taxes that they say are unpaid. But yet I have voluntarily, not voluntarily, but I have, given them tender for that because of a sewer line that goes through the property for 40-some years without a bona fide easement agreement. And when they did come up with an easement agreement, they came up with one that said my grandmother has stood before the notary back in 1973, and she died in 1959. I mean, this is how corrupt the system is here in Lackawanna County, Pennsylvania, where Biden's from. So anyway, and then what I did was, because of seniorage, do you know what seniorage is? Seniorage is the production of the notes, okay, production of the notes, the Federal Reserve notes, based on the cost of printing. So back less than a year ago, it was 5.5 cents to print a $1 note. And this has not changed, because I have from the newspaper here, 1937, it was actually in the newspaper how the money system worked and how the printing of the notes, okay? So anyway, I have all the evidence, and if you want me to share my screen, I could share it. And I'm wondering and the reason I'm asking is that it does say in here there is, as far as the exceptions go, for a jury, okay? In general, a bill of exception, and this is from Bouvier. Hang on a minute. Let me get this so I can read it. Okay, in Bouvier, as it said, in general, a bill of exception can be had only in civil case. When in the course of a trial or a cause, the judge, either in his charge to the jury or in deciding an interlocutory question, mistakes the law or is supposed by the counsel on either side to have mistaken the law, the counsel against whom the decision is made may tender an exception to his opinion and require him to seal a bill of exceptions. In criminal cases, the judges, it seems, are not required to seal a bill of exceptions. This is not a criminal case, obviously. So everything is on the side of a jury, because it goes on to say the bill of exceptions must be tendered at the time the decision complained of is made, and it has been, or if the exception be to the charge of the court, it must be made before the jury have given their verdict. So once they give their verdict, I'm supposed to be on a telephone hookup on the 11th, or the 11th, yeah, not the 11th, I'm sorry, the 19th. And If I have to bring it before a jury, I'm wondering if you guys would be willing to take it on.
Yeah.
Do you think so? Okay. I mean, I could show you. I mean, I have, in some of the paperwork that I have, Okay, to whom it may concern, I gave them a second opportunity to cure this, okay? And who it went to first said that we are returning the money orders and hopefully this matter can be resolved between the Tax Claim Bureau and yourself. Therefore, Hanevig is providing to tax collector Carol Baris and Joseph Joyce an additional opportunity to cure what may, at law, in law, and by law, be deemed misprison of felony. Solicitor Penator fully further stated in his response that according to the Lackawanna County Tax Claim Bureau, there is about $6,300 owed on the property from 2017 to present. To verify his claim, Penator attached two-page tax claim inquiry showing five additional payments had been tendered during this period of time, amounting to $988, which would have, if appropriately spent for the printing of notes at their then current cost, provided to the Lackawanna County, Bell Township, and Carbondale area school districts well in excess of the current $6,300 amount addressed to be owed. Had the current and previous directors of the Lackawanna County Tax Claim Bureau enforced their seniorage obligations as contracted by, quote, the people, and the assessed $988 would have, at the current 2020 cost per note, provided to the treasuries $12,831 $1 notes or $5,040 of $100 notes. After subtracting, in this instance, the $6,300 amount reported to be due, there would have been a profit to, quote, the people in that municipal authority, an amount greater than $6,531 in $1 note and notes and no less than $497,781 in $100 notes. Should you, Joseph Joyce and Carol Baris, perform your fiduciary obligations to the people, in quotes, an additional amount of $6,675.33 in $2 notes and $131,122.45 in $100 notes would sufficiently satisfy Baris' seniorage responsibilities to Hanevig in particular and henceforth the tax people of Fell Township in general. It is incumbent upon those who supervise the seniorage authority of municipal authorities on behalf of we, in quotes, comma, the people, in quotes, to request that Carol Baris cash the money orders from Hanevig herein being resent to her and identify the entities, human or other, who in Lackawanna County are authorized to purchase the appropriate amount of notes on behalf of Hanevig and others so situated who presume the validity of the people's seniorage authority is lawfully pursuant to Article 1, Section 2 of the Pennsylvania Constitution. Article 1, Section 2, of course, includes the reader who is presumed to have the same political powers, quote, recognized and unalterably established, end quote, quote again, in the people and founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, happiness. For the advancement of these ends, they have at all times an inalienable and indefeasible right to alter, reform, or abolish their government in such a manner as they may think proper. In addition, pursuant to another case, just compensation continues to accrue with an annual interest rate in accordance with the Pennsylvania, you know, rules of civil procedure, damage for delay. Current 2020 calculations show $988,468.26 to be the amount due the Job Estate for services rendered to the Lackawanna River Basin Sewer Authority and their end users since notice of fault was submitted to Joseph O'Brien on March 23rd, 2017.
Can we bring it to a summary here? I think I did wish that we're willing to hear your case, but now is not the time to present your entire case, I don't think.
No, I know it isn't. I'm just, asking if you guys would be willing to take it on. It may.
Well, sure, we can discuss it. Do you have documents that you can present that kind of summarize what the nature of your case is? And maybe we can start a web page for a repository of what we're looking at here so that people can have reference points to the nature of your case.
Yeah, I want to see how they handle it, though, because I think that, who I'm going to be going in front of, I had been in front of him before, and it was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing, and I didn't have all my ducks in a row at that time. And but anyhow, just the conversation I had with him, he seems like a good guy, and the fact that they have pushed this forward as they did, they know who I am up here. I mean, I haven't been silent. I ran for office and things like that, and I was on the zoning board, and they kind of, brushed me aside because I was going for the people, and so I understand the politics here in the area, and they know who I am, that I just speak out. So let me see how it goes on Thursday and the 19th, and I'll let you guys know. And Daryl, I suppose you'll be on board too, correct?
Nikki, are you familiar with 31 CFR 363.6?
Not with the numbers. Tell me what it's about.
Okay, what it says, it defines minor, I think it's minor, where it talks about that a minor is one that is under the age of 18 or one that is over the age of 18 that has not claimed his securities. And if you fit into that definition, then they will hold you as a 14th Amendment citizen, subject, basically property.
I don't want to be held as a 14th Amendment. I don't want to be held. I wouldn't be able to question the debt if I was a 14th Amendment citizen.
Well, I know, but this is what 31 CFR 363.6 is, and I think that is what they look at when you go into a court, into one of their corporate courts, and they just run right over you, and basically because a minor person does not have standing in judicial, as it says in the War and Emergency Powers as amended in 1933. So that's what I'm seeing over and over, and I yield.
I want to bring to your attention, too, I'm looking at my at counter, to find out who's been navigating on my blog. And I see that the County of Lackawanna has been on my blog yesterday. And they had looked up something I wrote back in the 90s, and King's Priest and Our American Birthright. And they spent about 7 minutes on that, and they spent about 6 minutes looking up my congressional testimony that was taken by Bill Windsor when he was going through, the nation with the lawless America. That was back in 2012, I believe. So they've been doing some research on me. I'm sorry?
You got somebody's attention.
I know. I see that. It was about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, maybe they'll learn something.
Oh my goodness. And it's interesting because I filed a second follow-up, an addendum to what I had filed about this yesterday around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So the guy must have been on it as I was there in the office. That is strange. Whoa. I'm sorry. I don't mean to take up time, but I can't make this stuff up.
I'm gonna have to sign off here. I got some of this.
Me too. I gotta go to sleep on this one. Okay, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you, Charles.
Yeah.
And thank you, Daryl.
Everyone.
Bye bye now.
Yeah, goodbye.
Good night.